is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Elizabeth Peake, Liz Peake of The Hill, a columnist of Fox News, a columnist much on Fox Business, to comment on what looks to be rosy scenarios with facts. It is a beautiful weather in New England, and the strong rise in the Conference Board Consumer Confidence Index in June makes it not far below the level seen before the pandemic, suggesting that consumption should continue to hold up well, even as the fiscal boost to income fades. Fiscal boosts meaning money from the government. Liz, this is wonderful news conjoined with this. The European Commission's economic sentiment indicator for June overstated the strength of the Eurozone. When did we last hear overstating the strength of the Eurozone? Shoppers in America, shoppers in Europe were catching on to the fact that the pandemic, whatever it will do now, has lifted from the worst of our downturn in 2020. Does this translate immediately into better market conditions and growth? Good evening to you, Liz.
Good evening. Well, I think we've seen that it has. I mean, it's a pretty steady progression of COVID getting to be less of a problem here and ultimately in Europe and elsewhere. Businesses reopening, companies doing better, companies finding they don't have enough inventory and they're scrambling to make more. So manufacturing is doing better. Yes, it's all working extremely well. And look, when there are 9 million jobs available and not that many people looking for jobs right now, how can consumers not be optimistic? Add to that something we've talked about a lot and I think has just not gotten enough play. Americans are flush, and obviously that's not equally across the board, but anyone who owns a house, anyone who has an IRA or stock investments or a pension fund, they're doing extremely well. And because of the transfer payments that we've seen, all the relief money, and the fact that the economy was kind of under wraps for a year, we are still sitting in this country, according to the latest estimates, on about $2.4 trillion in excess savings. So, you know, the last recession, the fiscal crisis in 2008-09 really hurt badly the top 10% of earners in America. Basically, people who had investments got hammered because the stock market took a big hit. House prices, obviously, were the underpinning, if you will, or the reason why the economy cratered. So people who had stocks and homes, who were invested in the country and had investment portfolios, just really took a long time to recover both their money and their optimism. This crisis has been incredibly different. It's been almost the flip side of that, where people who were able to work from home, that would include bankers, realtors, all kinds of white-collar jobs, workers, all those people, and a great many of them kept their jobs and really had suffered no hit to their income. At the same time, if they own stocks and bonds and if they had a house, they've seen their net worth go up. I think the net worth figure year over year is up $24 trillion. It's an almost unimaginable sum. And that, together with the largesse from the government, has meant not only rising optimism, but also spending. And so then, the other side of the coin, the flip side of that, is people working in minimum wage jobs in leisure and hospitality, working for the airlines, working for all kinds of businesses that were really clobbered by COVID. Minimum wage workers in particular have done very badly last year. That's the group that is now seeing the most rapid rise in wages and income. So, you know, it's a strange kind of mirror image of what went on in 2008-09, but perhaps has the same outcome, which is ultimately higher confidence and much higher spending.
Our markets are prosperous and hitting highs and then retreating and hitting highs. I note that in Europe, those markets are also setting highs after a six-month trend. So this is a global recovery. I connect, however, to two headlines in these last hours. Home price growth hit highest level in more than 30 years. This is the Wall Street Journal reporting, conjoined with more vehicles are selling above sticker price. Liz, is this the fact that people have money in their pockets and are not shy about 4 or 5% premium in order to get what you want?
I think that's exactly right. And you know that both houses and automobiles are hard to come by. I think we had talked before about the supply chain problems, inventories being extremely low. Nowhere is that more apparent than in the automobile business, and in particular because of the shortage of semiconductors. So, you know, we all are informed by our personal experience. I ordered a new Mini Cooper months and months ago. Finally, it has come into the United States, but it was maybe 2 months late because first of all, they couldn't build it, and secondly, they couldn't ship it. Shipping is completely overwhelmed with the amount of goods primarily coming to the United States. I mean, there was a long article, maybe it was in the Journal, I think so, about the American consumer really driving the recovery worldwide. It is the case that Chinese exports are up, European exports are up. Why? Because the American consumer, as we just discussed, has more than $2 trillion of excess savings, is seeing wages and salaries going up at a very rapid clip, the fastest increase in a long time. In fact, and again, even at the lower end of the income scale in America, we have wages being raised by companies like McDonald's by 10%, Amazon 10%, et cetera. So really, we just have a huge rising tide here, and it is indeed lifting all ships. And you know, Europe is behind us because they were behind on rolling out their vaccines, but they're not behind us by more than 6 months. So it is nice to see, and not surprising to see, A, that they're opening up to tourism included, by the way, but also that their economies are reflecting that.
Looking ahead, the market likes to boast that it can discount for 9 months out. So what the heck, I'll go with it. Looking ahead to the first quarter of 22 or the second quarter of 22, I find this new phenomenon that the Wall Street Journal has highlighted as the great reshuffling. It doesn't flow, but there it is. The idea is that the pandemic has made it possible for people to rethink how they live their lives outside of cities. I read from the Wall Street Journal reporting of the great reshuffling. White-collar workers are trading their expensive lives in the nation's most densely populated areas for cheaper, greener pastures. Online real estate company Zillow Group calls it the great reshuffling. Fringe outlying communities of major metropolitan regions were prized for their extreme privacy or more affordable housing before the pandemic, but were typically much less wealthy than the denser cities and affluent suburbs they surrounded. The great reshuffling will likely make these far-flung exurbs richer and denser. Liz, I testify here in Fairfield County at the edge of Litchfield County. There are no homes for sale. Maybe a few homes, the great big horse farms up on Quaker Ridge in New York, but no houses that you'd say can easily transfer to young families or even senior families. Because we're on a commuter line into New York, I'm wondering if you can imagine this phenomenon happening in all of the outerlying counties, Dutchess County north of Westchester or Litchfield County north of Fairfield, that when we put our lives back together, it will look profoundly different as to where we live, where we spend money, and what about the fate of New York City?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, whenever New Yorkers get together right now, that is the primary topic of conversation. You know, when are you going back? Are you going to be in the city 5 days? What's your boss telling you in terms of how often you have to turn up, et cetera? And it's a tremendous, it's becoming, I think, kind of an employment competitive weapon in New York City, certainly amongst the banks. We had, I think it was UBS, come out and say, no, it's okay. If you want to work remotely, that's fine. You know, let's figure it out. We'll figure out where you have to be sort of headquartered. You know, do you have to be in the office 1 or 2 days a week? Is it even that much? Which is the first big bank, I think, to say, yeah, it's working okay. We're not going to change your life overnight. Whereas, as you've read, Goldman, JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley have been pretty firm about, yes, we need people back in the office because we have an apprenticeship kind of industry. The young people really don't learn unless they are in the office with their senior managers, you know, teaching them the ropes. So it's a really fascinating time. An awful lot of people who don't work for banks, who work for hedge funds or whatever in the financial business, have a lot of flexibility. They have seen that they can do deals from home. And unless you're going to, I mean, I think, you know, it's going to be a hybrid, John. And I think most companies feel that they do need to have some periods of time when everyone is together, they're sharing ideas. And also, by the way, there's going to be some need for business travel. If you're about to buy a company, you need to go and see that company, you know, make sure it exists, make sure the inventory is there, et cetera. So I think it's a hybrid. People are still figuring it out. But here's what they have discovered. An awful lot of people don't need to be in New York City. And whether it's banking or publishing or real estate or whatever, a lot of jobs can be done virtually. Families are discovering that having a big house for much less money is pretty great if you have small children. They're also discovering that schools outside of New York City are pretty good and perhaps better than in the city, and much less expensive if you're talking private school. And if you're talking public school, probably the quality is higher. So, you know, perhaps this was a long overdue correction. There's no particular reason why everyone has to live in a big city. And if you make the cities less safe, more expensive, and not as necessary, you know, you're asking for trouble in terms of being a, let's say, a commercial landlord or whatever. Those are the companies that really are facing, you know, kind of dangerous times here, because every company is figuring out how to shrink their footprint. Real estate got so high in a lot of our big cities that many kinds of companies are eager to do that, to have fewer workers on site. So there's a lot of readjustment taking place. I think it's a fascinating time. People are actually having to think through, you know, how they want to live their lives.
It's culture, Liz. The culture is mm-hmm. now tolerant, as it was not before, that not living in New York City is not a it means that you have discounted prices, that not living in New York City can mean that you have flexibility to move. It also makes our employers more competitive, Liz. I read routinely now how employers at first thought, well, I'll pay you less because you don't live inside this, the expensive city. But now that's reversing. I'll pay you more if you work for me. I don't care where you live. And that's the scramble that's going on. Now, I'll twist this a little bit. Is that going to lead to dislocation of major cities? Because they are a source, they are our greatest creation. Civilization's gem are the cities. Are we going to see them depopulate, Liz? And we'll talk of the East Coast and the West Coast. In between, it's a mixed bag.
Yeah. Well, I do think that people are becoming less tolerant of the downside of living in cities, the cost, the high taxes that have been imposed by mainly blue state governors and mayors, and the crime. You know, I think Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez dismissed the crime wave as hysteria, but, you know, many of us have lived through this before. It took a real change in direction to solve the crime surge that led to that famous bill that Joe Biden passed that really cracked down on violent crime. Well, we're going to have somebody decide that, no, it's not okay to let people who have been arrested 40 times for violent assault out of jail the next time they do it again, that doesn't work. That doesn't protect our people. We can't have criminals on the streets waving handguns in people's faces with no penalties ascribed to that. So, you know, I got to tell you, I think the administrations of these cities have, number one, got to solve the crime problem. Number two, I think they got to make their schools better. Number three, they have to figure out how taxes shouldn't go up anymore, which is sort of the rote response of Democrat leaders. But it's gotten to the point where people are fleeing, particularly New York, to Florida. And by the way, also San Francisco and L.A. to Texas and Nevada and other states. So I think that this is a challenging thing, and I agree with you that the upside, the culture, the museums, the ballets, the wonderful things that attract people to the cities, those will still be there. They're not all back. They will come back. But I tell you what, it's a high price to pay if you feel like your life is in danger just walking down the street.
Liz Peek, columnist at The Hill, columnist at Fox News, much on Fox Business. We turn to Washington's understanding of the recovery next. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.